Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Do Go On Presents.
Okay, hopefully. So underneath this, I'd love to lay down some sort of opera or quarrel music. Is quarrel right? No, that's...
I'm
that's...
on it.
A quarrel is, you piece of shit!
Do you mean quarrel?
Coral.
Coral.
Coral. No, that's just underwater stuff. Under the sea.
Under the sea. You piece of shit under the sea.
Darling,
that's a
better.
Coral
Darling,
quarrel.
It's better. Take it from me.
That's such a good song, that one.
We got distracted real early there.
So this what is, are we here for again?
This is Do Go On Presents. The second time we've done this now, we're dropping in, you know, midweek in between episodes to tell you about another great show that I recommend, Jess recommends, and most of all, Matt recommends.
I also recommend.
Do
yeah.
not speak for me.
I do. I like these Do Go On Presents episodes because we all wear tuxedos.
It's so nice.
And it's nice to have an excuse to pull it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Pull out the tuxedo.
The tuxedo.
Thank God. It's a nice
Do not look under the table, Dave. Yeah.
You're pulling it out of the tuxedo.
It being another great episode to present, and also the first one we're presenting, of Primates, another podcast we record in this studio, often with you two, always with me. It's a podcast about primates in popular culture. Sounds bloody stupid. And I know a bunch of you have already heard it and have been really nice about it, but I think maybe others of you haven't. So we thought, why not just drop it right in to make it real easy? And this week's episode that I'm going to play for you is from a couple of weeks ago with you and me, Dave.
Yes, I had a great time. You invited me on to be one of your first guests on Primates. Appreciated that, Matt. Appreciate that.
It was, hey, the honour was all mine.
You're helping me out.
Jess has also been on an episode in the past, and she's on the upcoming episode this week, if you're interested.
And I have listened to the episode that we're about to play. I've listened to you boys because I support you.
Thank you.
Let me just say.
Oh, no. Here we go. A bit of truth.
That I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh.
And it was an absolute delight.
Any feedback?
No.
Great. I feel like we're having another quarrel here.
I guess it probably makes more sense just to play it for you so rather than...
No, I'll explain it.
Okay, yeah. No, I'd love to hear... How would you break it down as a show? Because people have said to me that they liked it once they gave it a try, but it took them a while because they were like, this doesn't sound like something that interests me.
Which I think is fair you enough. Just have to be able to go with the flow and be a bit whimsical and just have fun.
Yeah, it's mainly a fun time. It's not taking itself too seriously.
No. Totally. And you've had a lot of other great guests from Planet Broadcasting. Who else have you had?
We had Meso on and also James, Mr. Sunday Movies, on different episodes. Claire from Just Make the Thing. I've also had Alistair Tremblay-Birchall and Andy Matthews from Two in the Think Tank. This week, this episode coming up with Jess again is about a comic book character, which is so much fun.
So great.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's been a real bloody blast to do. And I'm stoked that Dave and Jess are happy for me to drop this in your feed. Sorry if this is annoying, but Do Go On Presents is our time to get in the tux. Edos.
Mm.
Play a few stringed instruments under the sea. And Dave, you were on this episode. Do you want to throw to it?
This is Do Go On Presents Primates, Matt Stewart's podcast featuring Dave Warnke talking about The Simpsons classic episode, A Fish Called Selma, one of my all-time favorite episodes featuring the Dr. Zaius episode where Troy McClure is in the Planet of the Apes musical, and it is hilarious.
So we'll play a good chunk of this episode now, and then we'll come back and have a quick chat to you after. And if you want to find it, just search in your... either you can look at the link below this in the description, or just search Prime, P-R-I-M-E, space, mates. It's a fun little thing there. If you say it quick, it sounds like primates.
Wordplay. Very clever.
And may I just say the last word. Play the clip.
Welcome to Primates, the podcast where we go through primates in popular culture from Chimpan A all the way to Chimpan Z. This week, my primate, my very special guest, is Mr. Dave Warnke. Welcome to the show, Mr. Dave.
Hello, thank you so much for having me as one of your prime mates.
It's so nice to have you here. Of course, some listeners may know that we do another podcast together. We have for about almost 3 years now called Do Go On.
I know, we needed another excuse to hang out together in the studio.
I reckon the vast majority of the time I hang out with you is with a mic in front of my face.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit like Kardashians. The camera is always rolling.
Yeah.
But in that show, it's almost not always rolling because I'm sure it's very scripted.
It has that vibe. The bit I saw of it about 5 years ago, would it have been going that long?
Oh, definitely. I think it's been going, it'll be close to 10 years or something.
10 years.
So basically on that show, I get suspicious when someone's being filmed and then they make a call and then it cuts to like their mum that they're ringing and there just happens to be her on
the... Answering them.
Like they have 9 camera crews for every family member in case they answer a phone call.
Any documentary where they'll have the camera, someone, well, we're going to go see this, if someone's at this house, they'll knock on the door and then they'll have the reverse shot of them opening the door from inside. You're like, well, that's kind of ruined that illusion, hasn't it?
It can't have happened.
Idiots. Or... You're treating us like idiots.
Yeah, or they actually have several cameras.
Yeah, just well, maybe Kardashians could have such a wild budget that it's all go.
No, I imagine it's fake. Let's go with that. Let's go with that.
We're talking about this week, obviously another classic primate episode in the history of popular culture. Which episode have you chosen here today?
We've decided to go with my all-time favorite TV show, The Simpsons. And their episode from season 7, A Fish Called Selma, which our listeners may remember if they are as big a Simpsons fans as us. The one where Troy McClure is the main character in the episode and he marries Marge's sister, Selma Bouvier, to try and aid his fledgling career because he's been shoved into obscurity because of rumors about his sex life.
Yes, that's right. And they never fully spell it out, but it's aquarium related.
Yeah, that's right. They keep implying that he has sex with fish.
It's a romance. What does he say? Because it's not a...
A A romantic abnormality.
And he goes on and he wants to... Anyway.
He's about to bring it out. Which I was, when I was reading about this episode, one of the things I read was, it's you know how they have many pop culture references throughout the show. That is a reference to the rumors. Have you ever heard about Richard Gere's rumor?
No. Oh, yeah. Gerbling?
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
And then that, I was on Snopes and Snopes had debunked it.
Yeah, that feels very debunkable. Yeah, sure.
So basically, if you also are not familiar with it, Richard Gere, possibly, there was a rumor. I say possibly. There was a rumor. He definitely didn't do this. Used to shove gerbils up his ass for sexual pleasure.
Yeah, that definitely went around at high school.
Real?
As a rumor.
Because this is, when did this episode came out, The Simpsons? 96, so it would have been before this.
Right, yeah. So it obviously lasted a while because, I reckon I would have heard about that a few years after this, so it persisted. But I don't think all that many school kids are talking about Richard Gere anymore.
Imagine that. Whoa, who's Richard Gere?
Yeah. Okay, the gerbling thing, fine. But yeah.
Who's Richard Gere? How would a pretty woman get into his car?
This is in season 7, just before the famous sort of falling off a cliff of quality of that the Simpsons went through.
No, I really like it up until about season 10.
Right, okay.
But I reckon 8.
They say the first 8 is like...
amazing. Well, I reckon from 2 to 8.
2 to 8, yeah. Season 1's finding its feet, but yeah. Still some good stuff. And then 2 to 8 is the golden age.
It's so funny. Because we just rewatched that episode together. And how many jokes are there in it?
It's ram-packed.
Every little sign, every little bit, there's just something happening.
Yeah, it was amazing. A lot of them I didn't pick up. It was handy to have you here annotating the episode.
Well, what you'll find here is...
Just pause for a moment and let me talk you through this scene. It took us about 4.5 hours to get through the episode.
Yeah, it's amazing. I once thought about making a YouTube video where you explain every joke for The Simpsons. So wow. Every 10 seconds it cuts to me in a studio and I'm like, so what's happening here is?
I reckon there'd be so many I miss. I reckon there's plenty of jokes in The Simpsons, especially when I was a kid, but even probably now where I'm laughing. I know why it probably is funny, but there'll be a little element of it that I'm having to fill in a blank because I don't get a reference or whatever.
Sure, sure. But I love as you get older and you're exposed to more stuff, you start getting... More and more.
Picking
which
more
is
up.
The beauty of the show, because when I was 7 years old, I was getting none of this, but I was still loving it.
Yeah.
Still would have told you it's a very funny show. So it works on many levels.
We should get to the crux of why we're talking about this episode, though.
Yes,
Troy McClure, so this is the first episode where he's really playing a key role in a Simpsons episode.
Yeah, I think before that he'd just been, hi, I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from, and like, you know, doing mainly... sort of instructional videos.
This is the first episode where he actually met the Simpsons. Before this, he'd only been seen or heard through other mediums, media. So we find that he was big in the 70s. He's fallen out of favor with and a lot to do with his shadowy private life. And, you know, that seems to be it. In this world, the gerbil style rumor is a lot more prevalent. Than
yeah,
in,
for sure.
I don't think it ruined Richard Gere's career.
No. Well, I've never even heard of it.
The kids in Melbourne were going, hey, you heard that guy from Mothman Prophecies is putting things up his butt? Good on him. Is what that was the consensus around our schoolyard.
Definitely. You're very...
gerbling, eh?
Forward thinking.
Yeah. It started a real craze around our schoolyard. We had gerbil races.
And then the teacher comes in, but Richard Gere did it. All right.
All right. Well, he is a big star.
he's a heartthrob.
So accidentally, he ends up meeting Selma Bouvier, Marge's
that's right.
Sister.
At the DMV, I think that's what they call it.
Yeah, Department of Motor Vehicles,
I'm guessing.
And they end up going on a date because he owed her a favor. It was sort of seen that way. A photo's taken and the media are loving it. They're like, wow, it's Troy McClure with a human.
Yeah, so there's three paparazzis that just happen to take photos of them. And now he's back in the limelight and his agent, played by Jeff Goldblum in this episode.
And that was a cool... So he found him this role in... Planet of the Apes musical, and which was called Dave.
Stop the Planet of the Apes. I want to get off.
Which is very, very funny. Obviously, I don't have to tell you that.
No,
dear listener,
I didn't realize
you're laughing hard right now.
I didn't realize that was a reference to. This is one of those things where I don't get the reference when I read it. I go, oh, very clever. A musical from the 60s called Stop the World. I Want to Get Off, which is so bad.
It's fun. I'd call that fun. But yeah, so there's a few. So Phil Hartman as Troy McClure and Jeff Goldblum as the agent. But you were telling me a fun fact just before that the episode initially ran quite long.
Yeah, so initially the episode ran 28 minutes, which is, I think, something about like 6 minutes too long.
Right.
A lot long.
Yeah.
Basically because Selma and Troy McClure are the two main characters and they both have very slow speaking styles. So what they did was they realized that this was a problem. So they got Jeff Goldblum to revoice his character because no one had ever heard him talk before, but make him speak a lot quicker. So
the character's voice. People had heard Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Till this point, Jeff Goldblum had only played mimes. Yeah,
and he did it extremely well.
Yeah.
And yeah, so they got him to revoice it. And apparently they had to also cut a scene, Troy's bachelor party.
Ah.
Would have enjoyed that.
Yeah. Is that, hopefully that exists somewhere. I imagine it probably does. On a DVD extra or something.
Never come across it, but.
Anyway, let's hear a little bit of the Planet of the Apes musical now.
Starring Troy McClure as the human.
The role he was born to play.
Help, the human's about to escape.
Get your paws off me, you dirty ape.
He can talk.
He can talk, 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 he can talk.
I can sing.
Oh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius.
What's wrong with me?
I think you're crazy.
Want a second opinion?
You're also lazy.
Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius.
Can I play the piano anymore?
Of course you can.
Well, I couldn't before.
I can say sing along with that, basically. Yeah, without having seen it for quite a while.
You can still remember the tune.
Yeah.
I think it is definitely the best ever song on The Simpsons.
There are some good ones. There are plenty of good ones.
Monorail, one of my favorites.
Obviously a classic one there. I was reading a little bit about on this. There's this article on Vulture talking about the background of this episode. It's an interview and there's...
Sorry, I'm opening a drink bottle here. That's a bit of a squeak. A primate, if you will.
Primate squeak. You know, that classic primate squeak. Oh, I've forgotten. We always start the episode, and maybe I've remembered to do this one time, with the question, Dave, what is your favorite primate? Either specifically or species-wise.
Well, my favorite is one I didn't even realize was a primate. I've gone with the lemur.
Oh, the lemur.
Did you know the lemur was a primate?
I'm a casual expert.
Okay, of course.
In recent times, since I loved the movie Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Is there lemurs in that?
There are no lemurs in that, but that is when I really started to shallow dive into the world of primates.
You belly flopped the whole way.
Yeah, big time. A lot of surface area, very red belly, but bloody hell, I got
worth it.
I got monkey and ape knowledge coming out my pores. Which is, I think you might find some of those primates have in place of hands.
Oh.
Might be a different paw. I might be confusing two kinds of paws there.
Yes, it's definitely, pardon me, definitely a homophone.
A homophone. Thank you.
Yes, but no, I love a lemur, found only in Madagascar.
Oh. Do they feature in the film Madagascar?
I'm sure there's one.
Surely.
I haven't seen
the film. I actually saw Madagascar at the movies, I think.
You paid $20+ for that?
I don't know if movies cost that much back then.
Yeah, fair enough. Because I have this early memory of lemurs when I went to the zoo when I was in early primary school. And the zookeeper told us, so you couldn't get that close to the lemurs because they were on like an island at this zoo because they were so good at escaping. They had to put them on this lemur island because they're afraid of water.
Right.
So that kept them in. So that's kind of a sad fact looking back because they're sort of surrounded by water, but I thought it was quite good.
They were, you know, if you remember the movie Madagascar, just looked it up, that whole, there's a kingdom there. They were lemurs, including the king played by Sacha Baron Cohen, his advisor played by Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Richter was a lemur. It's an all-star cast of lemurs.
Looking at an article with a photo of David Schwimmer. Who was he?
David Schwimmer played a sad animal.
Seriously?
I assume, yeah.
All right.
I mean, it was David Schwimmer. He played the David Schwimmer version of it. It was either a zebra or a... No, he was Melman, the giraffe, who was a... hypochondriac giraffe. Melman.
Very David Schwimmer.
Very, yeah, he swims the shit out of it. He's not afraid of swimming.
He swims right to the bottom of the ape pool.
I don't mind. What's the second time we already had a Friends episode with Elsa Trombley-Birchall came on and we talked about the
ape
episode where Ross got a monkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is it?
Called Marcel.
Was it problematic, that episode? I know a lot of the episodes are now.
I was, yeah. That's something that has been started to be talked about a lot lately is Friends hasn't aged super well, but that episode I don't think had too many problematic things. And it was an early one too, it was season one. So yeah, I was bracing for it. I was ready to go. I have been reading this article on Vulture. It's an interview with some of the key players in this episode. And I thought maybe I'd read a few little quotes out here for you, Dave.
Oh, please.
So Bill Oakley, who took over as showrunner for season 7 and 8, and this episode's from season 7. I found this really cool. He was saying that pretty before Star Wars, Planet of the Apes, when he was a kid, that was the big Star Wars, that was the big sci-fi movie that kids loved until Star Wars came along, obviously. And then eventually Planet of the Apes started to have this sort of a bit of a kitschy sort of vibe about it. People would look back with some nostalgia, but it would normally be a bit of a jokey sort of thing. Obviously now very legit with the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and War for the Planet of the Apes.
Sure, sure. Have you seen the original one?
I have. I have seen it. I saw it back in high school. But that's got to come up in an episode soon.
Sure, I think it's the only one I've seen of any Planet of the Apes.
Well, you got to watch that new trilogy, the reboot trilogy. It's very good. I saw the Tim Burton one as well back in the day, and I don't remember because I was quite young when I saw it. I didn't realize how silly it was, but at the end, apparently there was pressure. We'll probably do it at some point and talk about it more, but apparently there was pressure for there to be a big twist like in the initial one, a big reveal at the end.
Oh, right. Okay, sure.
And their big reveal was that when he went back to Earth or something like that, it was a Planet of the Apes, only it had like a sort of spliced history with our history of the world. So there was like a monkey Abraham Lincoln statue is what he saw. It's like, what? The big...
Sitting in that big concrete chair.
Yeah, only it was Monument. Him only... He looked almost exactly the same, only he was some sort of a primate.
And that was the twist.
That was the big twist at the end. And it...
Damn you!
That movie, it did not... It was not well loved, that one.
No, I honestly, when you told me that you loved the new Planet of the Apes films, I think my gauge of them was that film.
Right.
Which I hadn't even seen, but I remember that being like laughed at. And then when you started loving it, I was like, Matt's loving this?
Yeah, right. Well, the initial series spawned so many sequels and prequels and spin-offs and all that sort of stuff. And then this new series has as well. But that one is on a little island by itself. Yeah.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before you jumping, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It'd be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
Sure.
The Tim Burton one.
It's a lemur.
Yeah. It's a little lemur.
Trapped on the island.
Played by Sacha Baron Cohen. So yeah, it was interesting he was saying that people did love it. And he said at the time, before the Tim Burton remake and the prequels, it had this camp classic status. All the lines like, take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape, which they reuse in the musical version. So he says that they occupied a rare place in pop culture, which I love that, right? But I love this even more. Josh Weinstein, who was a writer and producer of The Simpsons at this time, he was also a showrunner. This is what he said. He said, I'll tell you something. I didn't see Planet of the Apes until like 5 years ago. And this is a recent interview. So he hadn't seen Planet of the Apes. And he's okay. Showrunning this episode that is doing one of the most famous parody or spoofs or whatever you'd call
this.
You'd
get him a copy of the film.
Yeah,
like, just you'd go home one night and be like, all right, I'm going to get a copy of the film. Get the reference, and then tomorrow when we come to the meeting, I'll know what everyone's joking about.
I guess what you got to remember is that this was a different time. This was in the 90s. This was a pre-9/11 world.
Right.
You couldn't just download this movie.
No.
I don't know what 9/11 has to do with that technology. But back then that didn't exist, right? So just remember that.
Okay, I'll remember that, and I withdraw what I was saying.
Please. Do you think this guy could have just... You're picturing him sitting on his laptop at night going, wish there was something to watch. It wasn't like that. He would have had to have driven past a video store on the way home.
Exactly.
Hoped they had a copy.
He was basically making bread after work to try and feed himself.
Exactly. It was a different time.
I'm sure this showrunner was a peasant of Hollywood.
He said, I only knew the whole thing from the parody in Mad Magazine. So he's sort of, he's picking it up from references in other things. But yeah, when he wrote it, he hadn't seen it.
Which is so good because
he just knew the ending.
Because for me, The Simpsons is that. There's so many pop culture things that I've never seen, and I kind of get the gist of them because of The Simpsons referencing them.
Yes.
I love it.
Any examples?
Oh, I'm trying to think of... Oh, I've never seen the Kubrick film 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
But they reference that a lot. Many, many episodes. Anytime there's sort of any sci-fi sort of elements going on, a reference there.
They're obviously big fans.
Yeah, and it's a very influential film, and I'm a bit ashamed to say I haven't seen it. But maybe I don't have to because The Simpsons already covered it.
I'm pretty sure this Planet of the Apes is the first Planet of the Apes that I'd seen as well.
Yeah, I definitely would have seen this before I saw the Charlton Heston
one. Interestingly, this wasn't the first Planet of the Apes reference on The Simpsons. There had been many before, and there have been a few since as well. Like in Season 5, a couple of different episodes had one in episode number 85 called Rosebud. At the end of the episode, Mr. Burns...
Oh, that's the one with his bear, Bobo.
Yes, that's right. And in the end, he's shown in a futuristic setting where apes control the world and have enslaved human beings, among them clones of Homer. This is from the Simpsons Wiki Planet of the Apes page.
Let's get one.
Episode 96, during a NASA pre-mission press conference, Homer says he hopes they won't send him
to the dreaded planet of the apes.
Then he realizes the plot twist somehow as he's saying it, I think.
Wait a minute. Statue of Liberty. That was our planet. You blew it up. And then they have to say, this press conference is over.
So he brings an exit.
He's just slamming his fist in front of all these press people.
Wait a minute. Statue of Liberty.
That was our planet.
There was an itchy and scratchy episode in season 6 called Planet of the Aches.
Oh, that's good.
It's good fun. And it was sort of a mini parody of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, what's that from Bart of Darkness? That's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, that's Bart of Darkness.
Where he breaks his leg.
Yes, the Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, Rear Window one.
Yeah, man, these are all, every episode is just like plowed with references. Yeah. Like the one we're talking about now, it begins with a Muppets.
Yeah, that's right. Troy McClure is like scene. In a Muppets movie, sort of getting on with Miss Piggy, and then he has to fight Kermit. They ask what a Muppet is.
It's like a mixed between a mop. It's not quite a mop. it's not quite a puppet. Answer your question. I don't know. I think it's something already says. Anyway, so there's heaps. There's heaps of these up until season 29, which I don't know this one.
Definitely would not have seen that.
Restroom of the Apes is a reference to Planet of the Apes. Oh, that's interesting.
What's one just above this?
Simpson Safari episode season 12. One of the pictures in Joan Bushwell's serious research books is from Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that's right. That's when Monkey Diamond Mine that they discover, and it's like a parody of Diane Fossey and that other monkey expert. Do you know the other monkey expert? It's very, very famous. I can't remember.
From life.
From real life, yeah.
So there's, I know the gorilla one from like Gorillas in the Mist. Is that who you're talking about?
Diane Fossey. But there's another one. Another one who's still alive. And anyway, they discover that she's just gone crazy and she's been using the monkeys as diamonds.
That is Diane Fossey. Who am I? I'm thinking of the other one as well. Jane Goodall.
Jane Goodall, that's right. There's a parody of her, that's right. And they go through her journal and she's just got pictures of monkeys from pop culture. That's all her research has ever been.
That's very good.
Anyway, back to the Planet of the Apes musical.
Well, this is something I found really fascinating as well from this same Vulture interview. I'd be interested to know if you heard this. So Oakley's taken over show running Simpsons this season seven. This is what he said. Our goal when we took over was to copy season three. Season three of The Simpsons, which we didn't work on, by the way, was the best season of any TV show of all time.
Wow.
When we took over, we said, what was it about season three that made it so good? We reverse engineered it and said, well, a lot of these stories were pretty grounded, but they took a couple of crazy leaps out into space with like Homer the Bat. They did seven Homer episodes, three Lisa episodes, a sideshow Bob and Itchy and Scratchy. So we did exactly the same thing. Now, as far as the Selma episode, there was an episode in season three where she was going to marry Sideshow Bob.
That was a good episode.
So that's
really cool. I didn't know that. So they've just watched earlier episodes, even the structure.
Yes. Which is like that couldn't, like they've taken things even that surely were not part of the reason. The reason that season was so great wasn't because there was exactly seven Homer episodes.
They didn't sit down and be like, all right, we're going to have seven Homer episodes. One about Lisa, two about Marge, five Barts. Like that. They probably would have been like, who's got a good idea?
Yeah.
Okay, this one centers around Homer. That sounds really funny. Let's do that.
But I think it's fun. I mean, especially seeing as it was another really good season, yep. Season seven. So
should they do that again? Is that what you're saying? Should they go back to the seven Homers, one Sideshow Bob?
Take the wrong lessons out of historical successes. That's what I always say.
Okay.
I've always said that. You know, like when the Allies won World War II, I was like, that's why I'm always wearing army green, baby. Winners wear green. Yeah.
There must be some correlation here.
And this is another thing that I was saying. So Weinstein, the co-runner, was saying how everyone at the time, love Phil Hartman. Obviously, he passed away quite a few years ago now, but they still do love him. I'm not saying they don't love him now that he's done.
Yeah, for sure. And his other character, Lionel Hutz, is my favorite of all time.
So good.
So funny.
What color tie am I wearing? You'll be very surprised.
I watched that very recently. It's so, so good.
But he was saying, so they were just trying to figure out a way to get him in. They were saying he's so funny, so kind, so charming. They wanted to do more with him. He was only ever doing these little cameos with the Troy McClure character. You know, you might know, like on these educational videos and that sort of stuff. And they're like, how do we do this? So they said, and this is him quoting, this is our Troy McClure episode. And he said he'd never actually met the Simpsons at this point, which is what I said. And he goes, that's why we gave him the Chemisphere house, which is based on a real house.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a modern house.
Right.
Like a futuristic, but like now very dated house.
And so in the logic behind that was to go, the reason he's never come into contact with him is because he's sort of in the Hollywood section of Springfield.
Sure, he's in the Hollywood Hills.
But yeah, I love that line. Someone, when she went into that house, she's like, wow, it's like the future, the very near future. You were saying before we started recording, Dave, you're trying to track down more info about the writer of this episode?
Yeah, for sure. So I didn't realize this, but I, you know, knew we were going to talk about this show. So I looked it up, and the writer. So I think the way the Simpsons structured, most episodes would have like a main writer, and then they take the episode in, and then the team of writers would be like, oh, you could put in this great reference here. Because, you know, they obviously were this Rolodex of amazing pop culture references. They must have seen everything up until this mid-90s point. But and there's often writers, you recognize them, like Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, the showrunners of the show, had previously written episodes, so I recognize their names when they come up. But this one, Jack Barth, hadn't recognized it. He didn't even have an entry on Wikipedia, which I thought was quite surprising.
Yeah, for a writer of an iconic Simpsons episode.
Yeah, which we saw that some Entertainment Weekly put as the 8th best episode ever.
Yes.
So it's obviously a pretty iconic episode. Then I looked him up. This was the only, on IMDb, the only episode he ever wrote. So he wrote one, and he hasn't done that much else since. A little bit of producing on a couple of shows I hadn't heard of, and the odd thing here and there. But imagine that, writing such a classic episode.
Well, Weinstein explains a little bit how this came about in this interview on Vulture. He says there's a rule, and I don't know if this is like a writing association of America or whatever, the Guild, the Writers Guild rule or what, but he said there's a rule that you give 2 episodes every season to outside freelancers. Jack Barth, who is credited as the writer, is an excellent writer and he's one of our friends, but it's tricky. You have to get them up to speed and there's always a day where you walk them through everything going on in the show at that point.
Oh, for sure, because everyone else is living in that season, so they're like, what do you mean Krusty died 2 episodes ago, but it turned out he faked his own death? Like, but I want to write an episode about Krusty. Like, that'd be super weird.
Exactly. And I don't think they worry about those rules as much anymore. Anything goes now. But he said, but then it's like he's a regular writer and you pitch out the story together, then they write the draft. So they have to bring him in and educate him first. And it's interesting that it is a rule. I wonder why that would
Why
have
they
come.
Brought the two...
It would make, there'd be some reason for that. And if it is a Writers Guild thing, maybe it is something like to make sure people are getting opportunities or...
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not sure. But interestingly, they said the musical wasn't even in the first draft. The iconic
The bit we all remember from that episode.
They needed a reason for Troy to have a big comeback, but they weren't sure what it was going to be. I think, will it be a movie or a TV show or whatever? And then apparently, Weinstein thinks Steve Tompkins, who was the supervising producer, had the original concept of Planet of the Apes as a musical. And then Oakley, I love this, because normally in when people are writing history, it's all like, yeah, I think I was a part of that conversation. And stuff like people even will believe that put themselves into it. But Oakley says, I was out of the room and I came back and the whole thing had been written. I can recall a rare sense of electricity. I wasn't gone for more than a few hours. I was in editing on another episode, and when I came back, this whole thing had been concocted, and there was a whole room filled with breathless writers going, you got to hear this, you got to hear this. People don't usually do that, because there are so many great little tidbits that everyone was quoting. I recall being bombarded with enthusiastic pitches that were all hilarious. I didn't have to approve anything. It was already in the script, thanks to Josh. I was like, this is great, and I should be out of the room far more often. I think maybe the most iconic thing about the musical itself is probably the Dr. Zaius to the tune of Rock Me Amadeus.
By Falco.
Do you know anything about Falco? I know the name and that's about it.
So I know that he's Austrian. He was Austrian. So I knew a little bit about him. Once I used to do I still do my blind dating show at the comedy festival. And I get people to pick their guilty pleasure song to play. So what it is, it's 3 comedians blindly dating through a curtain, a single person from the audience. And I get the 3 comedians to play their guilty pleasure song to see who they're most on the same wavelength as the contestant from the audience. And they pick their favorite song. And Cam Knight, great Sydney stand-up comedian, brought in Falco, Rock Me Amadeus. And ever since then, it's been on my Spotify playlists. So I knew a bit about it from there because I got into a wiki hole when he submitted that a couple of years ago. But it says here, if wiki is to be believed, he is the best-selling Austrian singer of all time.
Wow.
Yeah, sold 20 million albums and 40 million singles. And I remember this part.
20 million albums.
Albums, I know.
That's up there with some big-time artists, I would have thought.
Yeah, pretty amazing. He had a lot of success, especially in Europe. Rock Me Amadeus was his big song around the world. Yeah. And then he sort of dropped off into obscurity a bit, and he was apparently planning a comeback when at the age of 40, he was in the Dominican Republic driving around, and his Mitsubishi Pajero collided with a bus, and he died. It says here he was under the influence of alcohol and cocaine.
Oh, no.
So I think he had a pretty wild life. I think
He was 40. I think Amadeus himself died in about, I think he was about 35.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty sure he died, mid-30s.
That is depressing for how much he achieved in his life.
Yeah.
Let's look him up. Wolfgang Amadeus. 35. Congratulations on knowing that.
Yeah, which is wild, right? That is, it's only 2 years older than Jesus. I mean, Jesus got a lot done then as well. But yeah, 35, it's funny that 35 is super young, but it's, and then you think, well, the 27 club, holy shit.
Yeah, the stuff they achieve is amazing.
I think Mozart did, he was a real young prodigy.
Oh, I think he had written proper, proper music, you know, concertos and stuff by the age of five or something, which is just outrageous. And he's the kind of person that could hear like a whole opera and then write it, hear it once and then write out what he'd heard, which is just annoying. Too much talent.
Yes. Just like us. I see so much of us in them.
Yes. I feel more in Falco than in Wolfgang, but there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. No offense.
No offense, Falco.
Oh, Falco. Okay.
Oh, sorry. I think you were saying no offense.
No offense, Mozart, but yeah. I know you probably want us to see us in you.
I know, but we've gone with Austria's best-selling singer of all time.
So this is more of an example of what I was saying about what Oakley didn't do. This, Weinstein does it a little bit differently. He goes, between the three of us, he's talking about him, Paul Simms and Bill Oakley. He goes, the three of us were constantly saying things like, thank you, Amadeus. After we came up with the idea of Planet of the Apes musical, I said randomly, thank you, Dr. Zaius. Maybe somebody else may have said it. So I don't want to claim full credit for it, but somebody said it, like the Rock Me Amadeus song, and then it clicked in and people started pitching lyrics. I think he probably realized halfway through, he's like, did I say it?
Did I?
Someone said it.
Someone's going to call me out for this.
Yeah, it's either that or halfway through he's like, oh, wait, you're recording this for something, aren't you?
Yeah, totally.
I'm not just impressing someone at a bar.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Hang on.
The other people in the room that day may read this.
Yeah, but I think that Cohen, David X. Cohen,
who's the co-creator of Futurama.
Yes, which is, I think I like even more than The Simpsons.
Really?
I think so, yes. So one of the classic lines, which I use in the intro to this show, chimpanzee to chimpanzee, even though they say it a bit wrong in America. So there's one scene, he goes, I know David X. Cohen had one of the best Simpsons lines ever, which is, I hate every ape I see from chimpanzee to chimpanzee.
I hate every ape I see from chimpanzee to chimpanzee.
And then Cohen says, no doubt I was going through the different types of apes in my mind trying to think of a funny rhyming lyric. Probably I gave up on orangutan and moved on. I certainly did not pitch it thinking it was a high point in the development of the human or ape culture. My recollection is I thought it was pretty good and had a decent chance of going into the script, but wasn't a sure thing.
Really?
Yeah, it feels like the kind of line where you'd be like,
That's in.
That is sick. Like, there's not many places. Like, you could say that. It's funny how you can build a context where a joke like that is brilliant. But if you said that, you know, like as a quip somewhere, it's still like fun and clever, but it's quite lame. But
yeah, because for sure.
It's in this world where it is.
It's a musical. It's a parody of a musical. Yeah.
It's like so good. Chimpanzee to chimpanzee. Love it so much.
Can I just be the first to start the slow clap? Getting a bit quicker, showing our appreciation for primates.
Boys, that was such a good time.
Jeez, it was great just sitting in here, Dave and I, just miming our words.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember the script that we wrote together and then recorded.
Jeez, it took us, you know, years to get that script approved by the bigwigs up at the podcast head office.
Yeah,
the PO. Tinseltown. Dandenong and which is podcasting Tinseltown, as I just said. But yeah, if you want to hear the rest of that episode, check out Primates. Please subscribe on your podcast app. It's a lot of fun, and we've got heaps of more great episodes coming out, and already a bunch of real fun episodes have been out. Let us know what you think, and hey, look, I just want to say, keep doing you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
thanks, Matt. Guys, go out there, support Matt. Supporting the show. He's got a new venture. Let's get behind him. Hey, Jess, what do you say?
I won't because then he'll leave us.
I know. All right, make him successful, but not too successful.
Look, there's a guarantee I will never leave Dugong, my first love.
Boycott the podcast is what I say.
What does that mean, Jess?
Nothing.
Stop using your fancy legal terms. Your legal eagle. Flapping your wings about with your, hello, I'm a lawyer.
That's me. Your impressions are getting very good.
I mean, they've gone from great to even better. That's what she's trying to say.
It's hard when you start great, but that's my plot.
You did it.
We'll catch you in the next couple of days with an episode of the classic version of Do Go On.
Yeah, Do Go On presents Do Go On, the actual show.
Yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in, and yeah, we'll talk to you again very soon. Laters.
Bye.
Slightly different bye on Do Go On presents.
No, I'm trying to get the last word again.
Just let her have
everyone. Oh my god, Matt. Goodbye.
Dave, you look like
you're oh my talk. God, what is wrong with you, idiots?
I'm really sorry I ruined it.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
I won't talk again.
Okay, let's let Jess have the last.
Sorry, minute. Jess.
I'm
again.
Leaving.
Okay. Dave, you happy now?
Where are you
now
going?
Now she's leaving. Well, this is a real bloody quarrel, isn't it? Under the sea.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.